You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Nobody has scored more goals in the competition than Ronaldo, the all-time leading goal scorer at the finals. Portugal are up and running.
And here comes Hernandez in towards Mbappe, and it ends up in the back of Germany's net. Hummels looks to the sky in frustration.
A French victory and record-breaking Ronaldo, Chris.
Yes, and in front of 55,000 in Budapest, we'll bring you reaction to Hungary, Portugal and France beating Germany.
We'll also look ahead to Wednesday's full fixture list as the Azzurri are back in action.
Hear from Roberto Mancini, Gareth Bale and Jerdan Shaqiri too. We'll be in Rome, Baku and St. Petersburg as we bring you everything you need to know about Euro 2020.
Welcome to the show brought to you by Qatar Airways. I'm Rob Daly and I'm with my co-host Chris Parrott. Hello, Chris. All 24 teams have now played at Euro.
Yes, they have. Amazing to think, Rob. We're a third of the way through the group stage already. Yeah. Only one match we've had without a goal. And you know what? For those who have won, Rob, they can now start to plot a way to the last 16 because one more positive result and they would be into that first knockout round.
Well, joining Chris and myself today is UEFA commentator Phil Blacker. Phil, great to have your company. France with that victory in Munich against Germany, 1-0 in the end. How big was that?
Very big, Rob. Significant statement success, I think, at the start of the competition for France. And a familiar performance from them as well. I've commentated on France throughout qualifying for this competition, throughout the Nations League as well. And this performance is kind of one that I've seen on a number of occasions where France have done enough and you always feel maybe they had another gear or two to go into. And France, having got themselves in front, were fairly comfortable after that. There was a period maybe early in the second half where Germany looked to develop more of a threat, but France soon got to grips with that and have already put themselves in a very strong position in the group. And of course, because of the nature of the group, how difficult it is, Germany on the back foot already.
Yeah, we'll get more into that game very shortly. But before we start our proper review of the action, I want you all to hear this. Well, that is the sound of 55,000 fans inside the Puskas Arena for Hungary, Portugal. Chris, it was special, wasn't it? And what a stage on which for Ronaldo to break some records.
As soon as you saw those supporters, it brought back memories of what it was like a couple of years ago and how much we've missed nearly full stadiums. And also you thought, this is Cristiano Ronaldo's day, isn't it? With all of these fans, 95% of them wanting Hungary to do well, which they almost did, and we'll get onto that in a moment. But you just thought it's going to be Cristiano Ronaldo's afternoon again. And so it transpired, another day where Cristiano Ronaldo makes history.
OK, well, let's have some of the numbers. And by the way, before you get into them, there was a great moment early in the game where Ronaldo gave the ball away with an attempted backheel in the first two minutes. The fans jeered him and he smiled. I think he enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Yeah. He is the ultimate showman. And, you know, football players, Cristiano Ronaldo as well, have had to play in empty stadiums. They haven't been enjoying it as much. They want to play in front of crowds. They love that camaraderie. And Ronaldo got it. And in the end, he had that last laugh. And as you heard right at the top there, the penalty goal, which was the first of two strikes for him, made him the all-time Euro top scorer. He was joint with Michel Platini, who got all of his nine goals in Euro 1984 as France lifted the trophy. But Ronaldo now out on his own at the summit. Also today became the first player to appear at five Euro final tournaments.
That is
extraordinary longevity that he has. First player to score now because of the goals today at five consecutive Euro final tournaments. And I think we just have to go back a little bit with this with Ronaldo, because if you think at the start of his career, his international career, this tournament wasn't kind to him. There were tears, there were near misses, and now you look at him and every time he plays, well, he's a winner now, of course, he's lifted the trophy, but every time he plays, he just seems to set new records, which, who knows, it's going to take something very, very special for someone now to catch Cristiano Ronaldo and maybe go beyond him in the future of this wonderful tournament.
Phil, he is a phenomenon.
That is the word, isn't it, that sums him up, I think, best than any other at the moment. It's just incredible. The longevity, for me, is what stands out. And the fact that he is still producing at this stage of his career, you know, the same numbers, maybe more numbers than he's done at any other stage of his career. It is just incredible, the dedication to be able to do that and the impact that he has on the big occasion. Chris said you expected him because of the sense of occasion in this game to deliver. And yet for the vast majority of the match, he actually had a fairly quiet game, and Hungary were dealing with his threat effectively. And yet late in the match, we're all talking about Cristiano Ronaldo again. He hogs the headlines with two more goals and delivers when it matters, albeit, of course, Portugal had just got that vital late breakthrough because it wasn't a routine victory for them by any stretch of the imagination. But Cristiano Ronaldo, you just know, is going to deliver on the big stage time after time after time. And it seems almost every time now we're talking about him, he has broken another record. But the ones that Chris has just mentioned are pretty staggering.
They are. And, you know, there was a moment right at the start of the game, Rob, when Portugal broke and Diogo Jota had the ball and went for goal. Now, had he squared it, Cristiano Ronaldo would have had a one-on-one situation. Jota's effort was saved. Ronaldo was very, very frustrated. And you thought, oh, is that the moment when his chance to make history today is gone? But ultimately it didn't. And just to capture how long he has been playing, I think this is another notable stat today as well. He became the oldest player to score two or more goals in a Euro match, beating a record set by Andrei Shevchenko back in 2012. So, I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo again steals the headlines, leads the show, and leads Portugal to a massive, massive 3 points.
He's going to be there at 2024, isn't he?
You just know it. We'll be talking about him then as well.
We want your thoughts on the most skillful players in his honour today. Get in touch on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, on Twitter, using the hashtag EuroShow. Loads of you have been in touch already. Ben says the most skillful player at Euro right now has to be Phil Foden. His touch and skill against Croatia was a joy to watch. And Astar says Memphis Depay, posting a clip of that incredible length of the pitch run that we saw him do against Ukraine the other night for the Netherlands. Keep your suggestions coming in using the hashtag EuroShow. We've spoken about Ronaldo, so let's start our review with that historic record-breaking night in Budapest. The Euro holders, let's not forget Portugal, get their campaign underway with a 3-0 win over Hungary in Group F.
Rafa Silva. Oh, it's been deflected in. Portugal go in front. They nearly always find a way, and they have found a way. Rafa Silva,
yeah.
It's a penalty.
Yeah.
Nobody has scored more goals in the competition than Ronaldo, the all-time leading goal scorer at the finals. And it's Hungary nil, Portugal 2. It's Ronaldo, he does it again. It's cruel on Hungary, but Portugal, the 2016 winners, are up and running.
They certainly are a 3-0 win. And by the way, that last goal, I think we're going to get into it later. Unbelievable team play from Portugal to carve out that second for Ronaldo. Well, let's speak to our Portugal reporter for UEFA, Carlos Machado, and he joins us now from Budapest. Carlos, you were at the Puskás Arena. What was it like watching Ronaldo do the business in front of thousands of fans?
It was a hard-fought win for Portugal. It was impressive. I was missing the atmosphere, the buzz of a crowd cheering a team. On this case, it was Hungary. But yes, apart from it, Portugal had to struggle a bit. But I believe Santos was patient, and his patience paid off. When he changed, the Hungary team was a bit tired because all this back defending that they were having. They did quite well, their game plan. But Portugal forced until the end. And then grabbed, for me, a deserved winner. Of course, the result was better than the performance, but they managed to start with the right foot.
And Carlos, after his record-breaking night, you spoke to the great man Cristiano Ronaldo afterwards. What did he have to say?
Yeah, he was very happy because, like I said yesterday, he and the others are all focused on the team, the importance of Portugal as a team have results. After it, he thanked his teammates for helping him score the goal he wanted. He managed a brace, which is even better.
Carlos, could you sense how worried the Portuguese fans were getting, especially when we thought Hungary had taken the lead and it was getting late into the game without Portugal scoring?
Yeah, of course, with the clock ticking, it's always a bit stressful for everybody, even for those who are inside, to cope with it. But I believe that the way Portugal pushed at the end paid off well, because Portugal managed to pull Hungary more to the back. And then they had, of course, luck, because the goal was luck, but it was fully deserved, I guess. And after it was, the hard part was done, and Hungary quit playing, and Portugal had a result that, I say again, was far better than the performance. And with this, they can start building on for the rest of the tournament, because they have this kind of margin to be one of the best third places, which is also a mental good thing to have.
And just finally, Carlos, did you get to speak to the coach and any other players apart from Cristiano Ronaldo? And if so, what did they have to say?
I spoke also with Renato Sanches, which was important to push even more, because Renato is a runner. He is brave. He wins lots of second balls and runs with it until the end. And Rafa, I spoke with him, a very collective player who undermined his role, especially on the third, on the penalty. He was very focused on the energy that the whole team gives to the game.
Carlos, thank you very much. UEFA's Portugal correspondent Carlos Machado there.
Thank you, my friend. It was a pleasure.
Always great to get Carlos on. Great to hear his insight, speaking to the main men in the camp at full time. A reminder, these two sides actually met at Euro in 2016 in the group stage, played out a cracking 3-3 draw as Portugal squeaked out of the group to go on to eventually win it. By the way, six Euro winners from 2016 started today's game in Budapest. Phil Blacker, what were your overall thoughts from what we saw at the Puskás Arena?
I thought it was an impressive Portugal performance over the duration of the game. They had to be patient. They created a number of chances, and had one of those gone in earlier in the game, it would have been a very different story. But I felt the longer it stayed at 0-0, the more actually it looked as if Hungary could spring a surprise. And there was a period probably actually just leading up to what proved to be the opening goal of the game that Portugal scored late on, where Hungary were looking more dangerous and they were growing in confidence. Maybe they did begin to commit a few more players forward than at any stage of the game, in the belief that all 3 points could be there for them, and the knowledge that 3 points would have them on the brink potentially of qualification from this most difficult of groups. But I think Portugal navigated that well. They didn't panic, and they had the belief in the ability, not just of Ronaldo, but in this super squad that they have as a supporting cast, that they would come good. And they needed that bit of fortune, of course, the deflection and Rafael Guerreiro's goal to make the breakthrough. But as soon as that went in, they were clinical in the way that they closed the game out, that they took it away from Hungary in the latter stages to put themselves in a really impressive and important position in this most difficult of groups. So overall, they'll be delighted, of course, with the result. They'll be pleased enough with the performance. For them, it will be on to the next one. It's the sort of message that they would have wanted to send out as defending champions in the first game of that defence. But the scoreline doesn't necessarily tell the whole story of the game, and I do feel it was a little bit harsh on Hungary. There were a number of nearly moments for them, and it will be difficult for them to pick themselves up from this, but they will take positives from their performance as well. For Portugal, they couldn't really have asked for too much more to get things underway.
Did we see again, Phil, at big international matches like this, the margins are so fine, aren't they? Because we could have been sat here talking about a 20-year-old who plays his football in America. I know you've seen him, Sabolcs Schön, scoring the goal of his life, and Hungary in front of those supporters winning the game. And it was rightly, disallowed, but that would have put Hungary 1-0 up just moments before Portugal did break the deadlock.
That's kind of the moment, I think, that I was probably referring to, when it looked like Hungary were finally believing that they could actually go on and win the game. And for a split second or so, they perhaps thought that they were going to when that one went in. It took it really well. It was, as you say, the correct call to disallow it for the offside. Sabolcs Schön, only his second cap. It would have been some story as well. You mentioned he plays in Major League Soccer with FC Dallas. They've only just brought him in from MTK in Budapest. I think he's yet to start a game, actually, in MLS. He's played just three times off the bench, totaling about 50 minutes or so, but he's a 20-year-old that was previously in the Ajax Academy, that they have huge hopes for. They're a club that develop young talent probably as well as anybody in Major League Soccer, and I know all the Dallas players who were preparing for training ahead of a game against Minnesota on Saturday, they were all sat watching. They posted this on social media, watching on the big screen, up celebrating when their teammate scored what appeared to be the opening goal of the game against Portugal. But those celebrations were cut short. But you're right to say, Chris, was the moment, I think, where it probably turned. But it is those fine margins, and that is why Portugal have the previous, the experience. They didn't panic it, and they went on to win it fairly comfortably in the end.
Well, the Hungary winger Roland Seloi wasn't too disheartened with the performance.
From our side, was okay, was good. We fight a lot. What you told me now, the last 7-8 minutes was not so good. Yeah, we have to change it for the next game. Yeah, the second half, we were better. We created more chances. Yeah, we couldn't score a goal. Yeah, we have a bad feeling. But not because of this, because we fight really 85 minutes, and then the last 7 or 8 minutes we received 3 goals. Yeah, I cannot say anything. It was amazing. We waited this a long time, and we are happy that the fans came back to us, and they helped me a lot.
Roland Seloi still savouring the moment. You could hear the fans bubbling away in the background. A few did make the journey, of course, from Portugal to see the game, but many had to stay at home, watch on TV. And there were some even in the UEFA fan village in London today. Lindsay Hooper's been speaking to them for us, and there was one dominant theme.
Right at the front of the fan park, how did you enjoy that Portugal performance?
It was really fantastic. I'm really happy with it. Yeah, because within 10 minutes, we got like 3 goals. So it's really Cristiano Ronaldo, fantastic, excellent, yeah.
Is he your favourite player?
Yeah, of course.
I'm being shown all the Ronaldo.
I'm a Real Madrid fan, so like he already left the Real Madrid, but I love him forever.
Ruben, can you just tell me what you thought of the Portugal performance? You had to be patient, but 3-0.
3-0, when you got Cristiano Ronaldo in your team, you got a winner. My guy got a brace against Hungary. That's easy. Easy talking.
I'm with Jesse, who's a Portugal fan who just watched that. What were your thoughts?
I really enjoyed the game and the environment here. It was really pleasant to watch the game with everyone. And it was like a really... I don't know, I really liked it. I enjoyed it.
There were a lot of people here, and Cristiano Ronaldo must have fans all over the world because there was a roar when he scored.
Yes, like everyone was shouting for Ronaldo. Like even foreign people, like everyone.
Lindsay Hooper on the ground for us. There are Portugal fans, and there are some people who are just Ronaldo.
Yes, there
Ronaldo
are.
Fans out there. Okay, let's go to the other huge fixture in Group H. The two-time Euro winners France against three-time winners Germany. Les Bleus have been tipped by many to add the European title to their global crown, and it was this goal that was enough to see off Germany.
And here comes Hernandez in towards Mbappe, and it ends up in the back of Germany's net. Looks to the sky in frustration.
Well, it was an unfortunate moment. And of course, you know, it's funny how the stories get thrown up, Chris, because Mats Hummels' recall to the German national team for this tournament was such a major talking point.
It was. He and Thomas Müller, who, remember, after Germany suffered a disappointing exit at the FIFA World Cup 3 years ago in Russia, and they were two or three players who were sort of retired, really, by the coach that ultimately then called them back in Jürgen Löw, or certainly called Hummels and Müller back. I don't think there was too much he could have done about it. It was all about the brilliance of Paul Pogba, not just for that goal, actually, but I think his whole performance was absolutely majestic. An unbelievably cute ball with the outside of his boot, which completely dissected the Germany defence. Luca Hernandez was in acres of space, crossed it in, as you heard from the commentary, and there were a couple of French players behind Mats Hummels who probably would have gobbled up the chance. He had to do something. Unfortunately, it came off his shin and it flew into the top corner, but it was only 1-0. France, for me, were pretty dominant throughout. Germany threatened a little bit, but the pace of Kylian Mbappe was a constant threat. And as I mentioned, and Phil, I know you've seen a lot of Paul Pogba in a France shirt over the last 2 years. He is, as soon as he pulls on that Les Bleus jersey, right, he is unbelievable.
The pass that you touched on was just sumptuous, wasn't it? It made the goal. And he just seems to play with a real freedom in the French shirt. And you say over the last couple of years, probably for the best part of a year of that spell, he was actually out through a variety of reasons, through injuries, wasn't always necessarily going to get in the starting lineup. And then Didier Deschamps, who's over the course of those last 2 years really tinkered with his tactical setup significantly to try and find the formation that gets the best out of the majority of his big name players, and Pogba undoubtedly is one of those.
Well, let's hear from him now, Paul Pogba.
Obviously, it's the start of the Euro, the start of the game for us. It was very important to start with the win, with the 3 points. We saw the result as well in the other end. And obviously we play against Germany. Everybody knows about Germany. Very, very good team. They put us in trouble today. But now we were strong. We were strong and we went to get this win very hard.
Star of the match, officially, Paul Pogba for France in their win over Germany. Chris, what else stood out from the performance? I mean, overall, it just felt like France thoroughly deserved the win.
I also thought France looked like they probably had another gear to go to if they really had have required. In the end, there were a few slightly nervy moments when, you know, it was only one. And, you know, in the end, Manuel Neuer managed to clear a ball the full length of the pitch and it bounced inside the penalty area. And, you know, if you're unlucky, someone gets ahead on it and it bounces your way and it's not 3 points for France. But, you know, they had two goals disallowed rightly for offside. Very, very close calls. Absolutely, they were offside. But that wasn't because necessarily the German defence had done anything brilliant. It was just slightly unfortunate. And Kylian Mbappe, who, you know, has talked a lot before this tournament began, and we know just how confident he is on and off the pitch. And he was frightening. And one of those goals which was disallowed was almost from a pure footballing sense, you know, it was disappointing because it was one of those, he was offside, but he finished it so sublimely from the edge of the box, curled it to Manuel Neuer's left-hand side and just crept inside the post. And I'm not sure too many could have complained if France had have won by at least two goals in Munich. And remember, they were playing essentially away from home against a very good Germany team. And I thought this was a pretty good statement on opening night for them.
Very composed performance in the end from the French. That Karim Benzema disallowed goal. Thought he was going to mark his return to major final football with a goal of his own. But there was just an offside in the build-up once again. Lindsay Hooper, by the way, stayed at the UEFA Fan Village for the Germany versus France match and caught up with some fans earlier.
I'm now with Nicholas, a Germany fan, and I just wondered what your thoughts were about the game, because there were a few decisions that went against France there and it was tighter in elements than I thought it would be.
Yes, definitely. So I expected France to be way stronger, and I thought Germany actually did well there. We're a little unlucky with the own goal, but I think we could have... There could have been some goals on the German side as well, so I'm actually not too unhappy with the game.
I'm with Christophe, a France fan. The final whistle has just gone, and just want to know what your reaction is to that result.
No, we are so pleased because, I mean, this has been pretty... I mean, there was so much suspense with all this offside thing and these goals which were not validated. I mean, this was so much suspense at the end, so we are so pleased, so pleased. It's a bit of a weird game, but yeah, no, that's fine. We went through. That's cool. That's good.
Yeah, you definitely take a 1-0 win against Germany in Munich in your opening group game at Euro. For Germany, Phil, what happened here? They went with the same 11 that had beaten Latvia 7-1 earlier on this month in a friendly prior to the tournament. And there's been so much discussion about the setup of this Germany side right now.
There has. It was the setup that we were expecting, but it just proves that you can't really read too much into the warm-up results, can you? And the level of opposition, of course, was wildly different. It was always going to be a really tough opener for them. They would have hoped to make a bit more, maybe, of home advantage in Munich. They had just, as I mentioned, the one attempt on target in the game, which shows how effectively France dealt with them defensively. They did have that spell, I felt, early in the second half where it looked like they developed a bit more menace going forward. Yeah, but really, France had them kind of kept them at arm's length for the majority of the match. It does put Germany on the back foot right from the start now in this group, doesn't it?
And they play Portugal next, of course, which is going to be a huge game on Saturday. Phil, in terms of superstars on show, this is the match of the group stage, right? As they came out, some stats were doing the rounds, and this one really caught my eye. Only three of the 22 players who started had won neither the FIFA World Cup or the UEFA Champions League. And one of those three players was Ilkay Gundogan, who has, of course, played in two UEFA Champions League finals.
I mean, scored in one,
And scored in one. The pedigree on show in Munich was remarkable.
It was a stellar cast, and that's why I think it was... The game that a lot of people have been looking forward to in the group stages, the last game of the first round of matches, so eagerly anticipated. And we saw that, I think, in patches during the game, exactly what the two teams are capable of without either really putting it together for a concerted period. France did so more effectively than Germany. But because of the experience that they have, because of what they've won, they have the pedigree, of course, to bounce back. But yeah, Portugal next up. You have to feel for Hungary as well. I mentioned after their performance against the Portuguese, they would have taken positives from that. Normally, of course, you've been beaten by the defending champions. You look to go again. Next up for them, it's France. And then it's Germany, of course. And there could be everything riding on that final round of group games as well. But because of what they've won, I think the players handled the occasion. They knew this was an opening game and nothing would be decided in it. And there is every possibility these countries, France and Germany, may meet again in the latter stages of the competition, where we're more used to seeing them play each other, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what, Rob? I'm sure that both sets of coaches will know, and all the players, given what Phil said then about the, you know, the quality they have and the experience of playing in big tournaments at the back end, that it really isn't how you start, it's how you finish, it's when you peak. You don't want your best performance to be on match day one, let's be honest.
Hansi Flick, the future Germany head coach, was watching from the stands as well. To finish the section, Chris, does Jogi Löw change things? Personally, I would like to either see Timo Werner or Thomas Müller playing in that central centre-forward role, deployed Serge Gnabry there. We have seen him do that previously for the national team. They don't really have a designated proper number 9 in the squad, even Kevin Volland to number 10.
Yeah, and he came on, right?
Yeah, he came on. Do you think they'd change things up for the next game?
I would kind of be surprised, because I think he will look at the fact that, you know, whilst they didn't create too many clear-cut chances, they were only beaten by 1-0. And one would imagine that this is the 11 that he's had in his mind for some time. So I can certainly see Timo Werner making an impact at some stage in this group. And certainly for those players who were left out, because we talk about France's squad depth, well, Germany's squad depth is pretty good as well. They now have a couple of days on the training ground to prove to the coach that they are the right people, perhaps, to start in that huge game against Portugal. Because Germany know now that, I mean, nothing will be decided in that match because of the four best third place teams going through, but they will definitely want to get at least something from that second game against Portugal, and then they'll very much be alive going into the final game against Hungary, whatever happens.
So Portugal and France start their Group F campaigns with victories. Remember, we want you to get in touch, hashtag Euroshow, in honour of Ronaldo and his 2 goals, showing the most skillful players at this season's Euro. Dennis says it has to be Jadon Sancho, while the Welsh Dragon, as he goes by on Twitter, says, rather unsurprisingly in truth, it's Gareth Bale. Keep your suggestions coming in, hashtag Euroshow. Of course, fantasy football, big chance for you now to mix up your teams heading into match day 2 of the tournament. 2 free transfers to your squad on UEFA.com, on Euro2020.com, and on the app as well. This is where we do some team moves from around the tournament, Chris. So let's start with England and Scotland, shall we? Because the two sides meet on Friday. Notable news from both camps.
Yeah, at Wembley in another massive game. Now, Kieran Tierney, of course, who missed the defeat for Scotland against the Czech Republic, he has a chance of playing at Wembley, according to Scotland head coach Steve Clarke. He said this today. He did a bit of light training and we'll see how he progresses. And then, and I can't really do this justice, he then added, he's called it a wee niggle, which for anyone who's not Scottish is a very, very Scottish phrase. So
a small problem.
A small problem. Yeah, yeah. Everybody in Scotland will be hoping that Kieran Tierney is fit. England, well, they have lost Dean Henderson, who is out of this summer's tournament, unfortunately. The England goalkeeper's been replaced in the squad by Aaron Ramsdale. Now, Jordan Pickford is England's number one, although there was big discussion in the build-up to the tournament as to whether it would be Pickford or Henderson. I think the interesting thing about Henderson going home is now Sam Johnstone is the number two, if anything happens to Jordan Pickford. And initially, he was probably fourth or fifth choice a couple
of months
back. Yeah,
he was fourth probably, yeah, wasn't he? Because of Nick Pope's injury as well. Okay, Jack Grealish did not take part in training. He was doing some individual work today for England. And a quick one on Belgium, Chris. Of course, they got off to a winning start in the competition. De Bruyne and Axel Witsel were the two notable injury problems going into the tournament.
Yeah, and no word yet on whether they will be fit for their game with Denmark, which is next up. But we've seen a really nice video of them on social media having fun in training, both with one of those big fitness bands around them together, and they basically had to battle it out to see who was stronger and who was going to keep the ball.
So who won?
Axel Witsel won.
Oh, did he?
Maybe no surprise, but Kevin De Bruyne had a big smile on his face, which was great to see, and the caption said, on the official Belgium Twitter feed, said, who said rehab was boring.
Okay, we'll keep you updated across the tournament here on the Euro Show. By the way, Rafa Guerreiro, 12 points for Portugal on Fantasy Football Today. Ronaldo, unsurprisingly, 10. So get your changes in before match day 2 gets underway. We're going to look ahead to the next day's games in a moment. But with match day 1 now done and dusted, we want to take a quick look back at the best goals so far.
Zabica. It's brilliantly finished. And it's Stefan Leiner. He's popped up from nowhere to give Austria the lead.
A chance to shoot here for Andriy Yarmolenko, who scores an outstanding goal for Ukraine.
Oh, what a hit! What a hit for Slovakia from Milan Skriniar!
It's Ronaldo. He does it again. It's cruel on Hungary, but Portugal, the 2016 winners, are up and running.
Now it's Schick. From range! Oh, it is a thrilling goal! It is one of the great Euro goals! It's Patrick Schick! Unbelievable!
Okay, I would ask everyone what was the best one from that lot, but I mean, let's get into it again, Phil Blacker, because we didn't have you on the show last night. That Patrick Schick goal, you know, I think everyone's favourite goal of the opening few days.
It has to be, doesn't it? Absolutely astonishing. To even attempt it, the technique to pull it off, just wonderful and significant as well in the context of that game. But it's a moment, and you do get them every now and again, not necessarily maybe at every major championship, but because of the stage on which the goal was scored, that moment will go down in history, won't it? And it'll be a goal that people are talking about 20, 50 years from now.
Do you know what? Hearing that commentary again, it's only 24 hours on, it brought a big smile to my face. That is going to be one of those iconic Euro moments. I'd actually also like to add, I think the second goal that Cristiano Ronaldo scored, Portugal's third against Hungary, really was
it. Oh, the little changing of passes of Rafa Silva in the build-up.
It was fantastic. And then just the coolness to go around Petr Gulácsi and put it home. I wonder whether, in almost a team move sense, that might be one of my favourites so far. But we've been treated to some crackers in the opening third of the group stage, and now it just begins to get towards the business end. The pressure goes up, and we're going to see a lot more wonderful moments. You can be absolutely guaranteed of that.
Hashtag Euroshow to get in touch on social media. Coming up, the start of match day 2, and the Italians are looking to make it 2 wins from 2.
You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
So every team has played once now. Wednesday's the start of match day 2. Chris, the games, please.
Well, 3 more, which is fantastic. We had only 2 today. What did we do for the couple of hours before the first kickoff?
We talked about the 2 that were coming.
That is very true, because they were absolute monster games, weren't they? But I did see some funny stuff on social media of people literally saying, what am I supposed to do now? I've been used to 3 games a day. Well, it's back tomorrow. So Group B, we kick off in St. Petersburg, Finland against Russia, and a win for the final tournament debutants, Finland, and they'll be into the last 16. What a story that would be at Euro. And then it's all about Group A. The early match in that section is Turkey against Wales from the Baku Olympic Stadium. And then we finish up in Rome, Italy against Switzerland at the Olympico. And again, Italy will qualify for the knockout stages already if they pick up 3 points.
OK, well, let's start with that game in Group A. Whilst Switzerland drew their first match, of course, Italy beat Turkey 3-0. Their head coach Roberto Mancini says he has a tough choice in choosing which players should start that game against the Swiss.
Our team is made up of all starters, and as we've seen over the years, even when we make changes, things always go well. So the players all deserve credit for that because they're all top players. Of course, I do need to pick a starting 11 at kickoff, but if I were to change anything, I don't think it would necessarily alter our results. We'll try and produce our usual performance and do so well.
Okay, should we head to Rome now? Wouldn't that be nice? UEFA's Italy reporter Paolo Minacucci is there for us now for some insight into this Italian side. Hello, Paolo.
Hello, everyone.
I must say I'm getting quite annoyed with you, Paolo, posting all the delicious food that you are eating on the Italy-Switzerland blog. What have you been up to?
Okay, if you are on a diet, it's better not to.
Look, it looks like you're having great fun in Italy and with the team, of course. And what's it been like around the group since they won the opening match of Euro?
It's plenty of the enthusiasm in the camp. Like there was even before the victory, you can imagine now even more. Like, but this group is pretty special. Even Bonucci today in the press conference say that it's probably the most united Italy group he has been, he has experienced, Ooh. And he has over 100 caps. So it's pretty special. It's pretty special because you can see this. You can see that when you watch even a few minutes of training that we can watch. They are always laughing a lot, and the youngsters and the veterans are mixing well. There is the group from players from Naples, Donnarumma, Insigne, and Immobile that are always joking around, teaching Napolitan to the other. So everyone is speaking a bit of Napolitan now. You can see that they're in fun together.
That's fantastic. And I guess the confidence around them as well, given they can book their place in the last 16 already tomorrow, confidence must be amazingly high.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Like from day one, Mancini worked on that because the confidence was really low after failing to qualify for the World Cup. Did it by asking them to play attacking football all the time, keeping possession, fielding talented players more than physical or strong players. He did a tremendous work on that, and you can see that they are playing with confidence. And even against Turkey, when they struggled a bit to create the chances in the first half, they play with passion. They knew that sooner or later a goal would come, and the confidence side playing well, and they're doing well. I'm sure tomorrow they will play another good game.
No, Alessandro Florenzi at right back. Are you confident that you know who's going to be playing in that position?
Absolutely not.
Excellent.
Actually, I have it's one of the main doubts for tomorrow because there are two options. Di Lorenzo, who replaced him when he got injured against Turkey. And Di Lorenzo is probably the safest option because he's really a traditional right back, playing more or less the same style as Florenzi. But there is also Toloi as an option. Toloi is a former centre back that can play as a right back as well. Gives Mancini a good option because sometimes the team switch to a 3-5-2 formation. Toloi will play in the back three with Chiellini and Bonucci, allowing Spinazzola to attack on the left with another, and switch to a 3-5-2 with Insigne playing close to Immobile in attack. It gives more flexibility to the team, the possibility to fill Toloi as right back. Obviously, he's not pushing as much as Florenzi on the flank, but gives flexibility. So I don't know, honestly, which one will be the decision. Like even the Italian media are quite share on this today. I was watching a bit of the predicted lineup. Gazzetta dello Sport was going for Di Lorenzo, La Repubblica was going for Toloi. It's the doubt of the on the eve of the game. This is the major doubt.
Talk to us about the atmosphere, Paolo, since that opening win and ahead of tomorrow's match. I know that you're with them in their training camp in Tuscany near Florence, then you go with the team to Rome. Do you sense that the whole of Italy is really starting to believe that something special might happen?
Yeah, the feeling is that. Yesterday Acerbi said, feel the same atmosphere that he had a few years ago at Lazio when they feel to start every game 2-0 up because there was so much confidence that when you take the pitch you feel like you are already leading. It's a bit, there is this sense of something happening here. Everything around helps a lot. We've been discussing before that how beautiful it is Florence, where they're staying to train. How beautiful is Rome, you should see now from the media center. I'm watching, I mean, close to a terrace where you watch all Rome, and it's fantastic.
Stop making us jealous.
So, I am sick of this. The views, the weather,
the team.
The team,
I could have a worse job.
Yeah, exactly. Paolo, we'll speak to you after the game, I'm sure. Thank you very much for coming back on the show.
Thank you so much.
Paolo Minacucci, what is he doing to us on this show, Chris Parrott?
And you know what? His opposite number in this particular game, Vieri Capretti, has been doing the same. He's just put another lovely picture up.
Do some work, you two.
The Gastroni in Rome, we know all about it. And it's a pretty big game as well tomorrow, let's be honest.
Well, as for Switzerland, the opposition, one of their star men, Jerdan Shaqiri, says they must play better than they did against Wales.
We didn't use our chances very well against Wales, and in the dead ball situations we will have to be more concentrated because Italy has good players. They can score goals with their head. But we've seen it from other top teams, and they've not been perfect either. So I hope that we'll get into the game even better and to be better than in the last game and then do well tomorrow.
Jadon Chakiri saying, I'm glad to see Roberto Mancini, his former coach at Inter, but I want to give him a disappointment. Of course, we'll have reaction for you on the next edition of this show. Italy taking on Switzerland on a Wednesday evening in Rome. Also in Group A, Turkey face Wales in Baku. Neither side won their opening game. Turkey lost to the Italians. Wales drew 1-1 with Switzerland. Gareth Bale's been speaking to the press, and we'll hear from him in a moment. But first, here's the Wales head coach, Rob Page.
Well, it's a big game. It's the next game for us. We've got off to a positive start, having got a goal behind against a very good team in Switzerland and got a point out of the game, so sets us up nicely for another tough game. It's big because, like I said, there's points riding on it, and 4 points from the two games would set us up nice. You know, every team that's made the finals is here on merit. They've shown in the past that they're capable of getting excellent results. They work hard together. It's going to be an extremely difficult game, but we've done as much preparation as we can in quick turnaround because of the game on Saturday and getting the rest into the players as well as the work, but we feel we're ready for it now. There's a lot of senior players in that group as well. Yeah, there's some young lads, but I'm hoping the senior players will have an influence on the younger ones and manage the game as well. And it's about managing the game out there with the players as well and not entertaining anything. If we're going to achieve anything, it's about having 11 players on the pitch as well.
Here, Wales have improved. Moore! Kiefer Moore, restored to the Wales starting lineup, has scored a goal for them at the European Championship.
I feel like the 1-0 draw the other day was a good result. It wasn't bad. So but we need to win games to progress. So the next game is the biggest game, and we're all looking forward to it. I think momentum is a big word. I think the most important thing is we didn't lose the game. Obviously we would have liked to have won, but I think we showed a lot of character and strength to come back from one down to draw the game. So we'll try and carry the second half performance over to this game, and look forward to trying to play well and get a good result. It'd be nice to have fans in the stadium. Obviously we'd love it to be the Welsh fans, but nevertheless it's nice to play in front of bigger crowds. So that's why we want to be in Euro 2020. We want to enjoy the big occasion, enjoy the crowd, enjoy the atmosphere, and I think the more the better.
Gareth Bale there mentioned the fans. I think they're actually going to turn towards the fans, aren't they, Chris, for the national anthem in that game.
Rob Page and Gareth Bale have kind of come up with that themselves, because as he mentioned there are going to be a lot more Turkey fans than Wales fans in Baku, given the geographical location. But yeah, they are going to turn to that mini red wall just to give them a moment. And that is it's a huge game, right, Phil? Because as Rob said, neither of those teams won on match day one. So there's a little bit of early pressure on both, I guess. In particular, maybe for Turkey, but Wales will have taken a lot from that draw with Switzerland. How do you think they are shaping up ahead of this game?
They will have taken a lot. I think they'll be relatively relieved to have taken a point from that, given the way that the match panned out. I felt that Switzerland had the chances to win it, and Wales now will look to build on it. And I think this game is where they have to build on it, with Italy to come in their final Group A fixture. They'll look to take advantage of a Turkey team that have wounds to lick after the defeat against Italy. They do appear to have moved on fairly swiftly from that and focused on this game. And I feel that Turkey will be the favourites here. But Wales will take confidence from the Switzerland result. I don't think we'll see sweeping changes from them. But it is going to be interesting how they approach it. They played with the flat back 4-2-3-1 really effectively against the Swiss. And that was something of a surprise. Rob Page had tended to previously play Hanti with the three centre-backs. So does he go back to that? Ethan Ampadu, I think, is going to be the interesting one for me. Missed the end of the Premier League season through injury, so has kind of been eased back and was just made a very late appearance off the bench against Switzerland. He gives them options either at centre-back, can play in the three or in midfield as well. I think we may see him start if he's deemed fit to do so. But this is a huge game, and I would argue it is equally big for Wales. Yes, they've got a point more on the board already than Turkey have, but Turkey have got that Italy game out of the way, and for them, really, it almost starts here. So impressive were Italy in that match. I think Turkey, as they kind of have done under Senol Güneş, can put that to one side. This is the match that they will focus on and take 3 points here. All of a sudden, it's a very different story for them, and that would pile the pressure on Wales going into the Italy game. So this is the one Wales have to get something from, and it'd be interesting to see if they're a bit more attack-minded. I think Kiefer Moore, their goal scorer against Switzerland, did enough to keep his place in the side, and because of his presence up front, it does require a slightly different tactical approach from them.
Absolutely. Well, some more on Turkey now, because out in Baku for us, we have our Turkey reporter, Kigis Gukem. Thank you very much for joining us. First of all, how are you feeling ahead of this huge match against Wales?
Hi, Rob. Hi, Chris. It's a pleasure to talk to you. You know, first I need to talk about the opening game, actually. It's been quite a shock, and not just the score, but mostly the team's performance, you know. Nobody was expecting that, actually. They never had any spaces. They never had any chances. They finished the game with just one shot on target, and they couldn't even get past half line, to be honest. So it was a shock, but maybe it was a good thing for them, you know, like a cold shower effect. Sometimes when the expectation is so high, it can have a reverse effect on a team. And that expectation was and is actually so high on these players. And I think it might be a good thing to get the shock just in the beginning and realize what you need to do after. Right now, as far as I can see, the feeling is really good with Turkey team. They are really eager. They are looking forward to play against Wales at the moment.
How have they been able, because you're obviously around the squad, how have they been able to put behind that defeat so quickly? Is that a testament to the spirit of the team?
Yeah, actually, I interviewed Burak Yılmaz, the captain, today, and he told me that they were almost devastated for maybe 2 days. But right now, they are definitely over it. They look really high on morale today during their training. They've been talking about their mistakes. They believe they took lessons and understand where the problem is. They talk a lot with each other. So that's what Burak taught to me. And as far as I can see, the mood is really good in the camp right now. They are so elevated and they are really looking forward to face Wales tomorrow.
Absolutely. And of course, in the opening game in Rome, Turkey were the away team, really. But am I right in saying they're going to have fantastic support in Baku tomorrow night?
Definitely, definitely. I expect a lot of supporters to show up in the stadium tomorrow. It will be a really good atmosphere and many Azerbaijan people might show up for supporting Turkey. That will be a huge advantage, of course. Burak Yılmaz also told me today that they, when they faced Italy in the opening match, they felt being the away team 100%. And he says that now Wales has to feel that feeling against us.
On Burak Yılmaz, what kind of guy is he to be around? Because obviously he's the leader up front, he's the main goal getter. What kind of man and captain is he from what you've seen in this Turkey team?
He's a natural leader, you know, definitely he's a natural leader and he's really easy to talk. Actually, when I spoke to him, he just told me, you know, sometimes in teams you have some age differences between players. Some players might be shy. But he says there's nothing like this in Turkey's squad. I cannot teach them anything. Okay, I can share my experiences with them, but I cannot teach them. You have many players like Çağlar Söyüncü, like Merih Demiral, like Hakan Çalhanoğlu. And he's always helping them. Of course, they're always helping him too. And he's a really, really, really natural leader.
I think I saw a stat before the tournament saying Turkey had the youngest squads, away from Burak Yılmaz, of course, at the other end of his career. Do you think the fact now that some of those players have played in a major international match like they did in Rome will help them ahead of this Wales game and then Switzerland next up?
Definitely. You know, we should not forget this squad is the youngest squad in Euro at the moment. And actually, they still have plenty to reach their peak, one by one, I'm talking. And that's what I told about that shock, actually. That kind of a shock against a really strong team, by the way, against Italy, can be a good thing for them. You know, they were shocked. Now they will be on the pitch again tomorrow and can tell themselves that it's all in the past. And now we know much more.
Of course. Well, we had Paolo on the show, Paolo Minacucci, who's just been bragging about all the lovely Italian food he's been eating. Have you been able to enjoy the food, enjoy a bit of the culture in Baku, and what have you seen?
Actually, you know, Baku, Azerbaijan, is so close to Turkey culturally. I can't say that I had some traditional food since, but I will definitely try.
I remember being there and there's a lot of tea drinking, which I guess is something which also happens in Turkey, right? Is that another reason why you feel that Turkey will really feel at home in Baku?
That might be correct. We all love Turkey and Azerbaijan people also drinks a lot of tea.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for your time. And we're looking forward to this match, of course. Turkey against Wales in Baku. And that was our Turkey reporter, Kigis Gorkem.
Thanks so much.
Brilliant to get all of that insight there. And it's going to be a fantastic atmosphere, I think, tomorrow night, Rob. And that might just help Turkey.
Yeah, a bit of team news in that game, actually, from the Turkey camp. Çağlar Söyüncü had a minor injury, but should be okay, according to head coach Shenol Güneş, to play at centre-back. By the way, it's the first meeting of the sides since a World Cup qualifier in 1997, which finished 6-4. 6-4 back in August 1997. Hakan Şükür, of course, Turkish striking legend.
Record goal scorer for Turkey.
Just got four goals that day. Wow. So we take that kind of drama again, wouldn't we? The first game, by the way, on match day two takes place in St. Petersburg at 3 p.m. CEST as Finland face Russia, whilst Russia lost to Belgium in their first match. Finland beat Denmark 1-0 in their first ever game, not only at Euro, but at a major finals. Phil Blacker is with us tonight. Phil, I believe you commentated on the game that saw Finland qualify for Euro 2020.
I did, with a game to spare, I think it was, back in November of 2019, a 3-0 win against Liechtenstein in Helsinki. What an occasion it was as well. And they hadn't actually played the majority of their matches in the capital. They returned to Helsinki for that one. Teemu Pukki scored a couple of goals. And it was fairly clear early on. They knew that a win that day, and they would be playing in a first major finals with a game to spare, and they took control, I think, of that game, if I remember rightly, against Liechtenstein fairly early on. It was a favourable fixture for them, and the party atmosphere started well before that full-time whistle, and the scenes at the end were just incredible, and you could see what it meant to that nation, who had produced some wonderful individual players over different generations who never got the chance, of course, to be part of a major finals. But collectively, this team in qualifying did it. And now that they're here, they're determined to embrace the occasion and have the chance, of course, to go much further already.
Yeah, they picked up that win, Phil, against Denmark. And I think we've heard from the players today saying they didn't quite know how to celebrate it because of what had happened to Christian Eriksen. But they also said that over the last few days, it has sunk in what they achieved. And Lukas Kredetsi making the point that one more point from their two remaining group games and they'll be into the last 16, which would be a huge story for this team making their debut.
It would, and it would be fully deserved as well. Obviously, the circumstances of that opening victory, so difficult for everybody involved. And the Finland players themselves have been talking about the fact that they haven't quite recovered from what happened on Saturday. It's not behind us entirely, I think, is what Rasmus Schüle, how he put it. But now they're focused on this game against Russia with a massive opportunity to progress, really, in the competition against a Russia team beaten badly by Belgium in their opening game. And I think this is a major opportunity for Finland. Individually, if you look at the two sets of players, Russia would probably start as the favourites. But I've got a feeling here that it's set up for Finland on the counter-attack to really go on and continue the celebrations and continue this adventure, because that's what it is. They've embraced it all the way through qualifying. They got stronger as it went on, grew in confidence. They've had to wait, of course, for their opportunity. And this is an opportunity against Russia, who have the greater experience of such situations, albeit it's a much changed team from the one that reached the quarterfinals of the World Cup 3 years ago. Finland will really fancy this, I'm sure.
Well, the head coach of Finland, Markku Kanerva, has been making the point that playing their games in Copenhagen and St. Petersburg has actually been very good for their supporters. Only a few hundred kilometres from the Finland border to St. Petersburg. Chris, what do you make to the opposition here from a Russian point of view? Roman Zobnin, of course, one of their players, says, we need to eliminate the silly mistakes that we made in that loss to Belgium.
Yeah, and they are going to have to do it without Yuri Zhirkov, who was forced off in that match, and he's going to be out of the tournament, unfortunately, 37-year-old. I hope that's not the end of his international career, because he's done so much for Russian football.
Probably not, is it? I mean,
probably not. I mean, the coach was talking before the tournament about age is just a number, so he might just be there in Qatar. He might be there in Germany in a few years' time as well for the next Euro. I think this, for me, was a key quote from Aleksei Miranchuk. He said, Finland tend to defend most of the time. Now, he wasn't being negative there. Finland are going to sit back and be very hard to beat, as they were against Denmark. And therefore, the quality, the guile of Aleksei Miranchuk and Alexander Golovin is going to be key. Can they provide the service for Artem Dzyuba? Because we know if he gets a chance, he will take it. Fascinating to see for me how more offensive Russia are in this game than they were against Belgium, who are, of course, the number one ranked team in the world. You can understand why you don't go out and go toe-to-toe attacking-wise with Belgium, because you could be on the end of a fairly hefty defeat.
I suppose that's the thing, Phil, isn't it? It's hard. I mean, you've covered the Russian Premier League. You've seen a lot of the players that Chris just mentioned there. Can we really take much in the Belgian game, really, given the stature of the opposition? Maybe it'll just be a completely different prospect in St. Petersburg this time.
It will be a very different type of game, of course, and they will have to be more attacking. But I think that could play into Finland's hands, really, because they have the system in place to try and psych up that pressure. And it will come down to whether the Russians have the quality to unlock that defence. But Finland are going to be so dangerous, I think, on the counter-attack. Didn't score an awful lot of goals in qualifying, but they made them count. Teemu Pukki got 10 in 10, of course. And since then, Fredrik Jensen has been the top scorer for them in the Nations League. Kanova, the coach, has made the point they have to create more themselves. But I think the way that Russia are going to have to approach this will afford Finland the chance to create a little bit more. So it just comes down really to who has the greater quality on the day. Russia do have the players capable of unlocking this defence, but if they aren't at their best, if the pressure is beginning to build, having got off to that losing start and the nature of the defeat, yes, it was against the number one ranked team in the world, of course, and there is every chance that they will just put it behind them, move on and really kickstart their campaign here with a second game in Group B. If they don't do that early, I think Finland will grow in confidence and it will become a lot riskier for Russia. This really could go either way, and I do think Finland have the chance to get out of the group now.
Well, that's what kicks off match day two on the Wednesday action. Chris, you mentioned him there. It's probably a good time to get an update on Christian Eriksen, the Denmark star.
Yeah, absolutely, because Denmark's next match is against Belgium on Thursday, and we have heard from the Danish star himself for the first time, actually, Rob, since that medical emergency on Saturday. He's given everybody a reassuring update on his Instagram page, which was great to see this morning. The photo is of Christian Eriksen in hospital giving a thumbs up, and he then attached this message to it. It says, "Big thanks for your sweet and amazing greetings and messages from all around the world. It means a lot to me and my family. I'm fine," he added, "under the circumstances. I still have to go through some examinations at the hospital, but I feel okay. Now I'll cheer on the boys on the Denmark team in the next matches. Play for all of Denmark." So great to see that from Christian Eriksen, and that he is now, of course, a big supporter. So Denmark will be watching on and to see what happens in that game between Finland and Russia. It could have a big say in their campaign, and then they prepare to face Belgium in their next match in Copenhagen.
OK, a quick reminder of how things unfolded on Tuesday. Hungary 0, Portugal 3, a game in which Ronaldo became the outright Euro top goal scorer ever. And France, that massive win in arguably the fixture of the group stage, beating Germany by a goal to nil. Chris, what do you reckon to Wednesday's games then? Who's going to get the results? Finland, Russia, Turkey, Wales, Italy, Switzerland, the games?
You know what? I'm not just copying Phil here. I fancy Finland to get something from that match in St. Petersburg. And I think we might be sitting here in 24 hours' time on the Euro show talking about another debutant going through, just like Iceland did 5 years ago at Euro 2016. How about you, Phil? Turkey, Wales, Italy, Switzerland, who do you fancy?
Turkey, Wales is a tough one. I think that's huge in that section. I think Turkey will bounce back from the defeat against Italy and probably just have a little bit too much for Wales. And Italy, I expect to maintain their strong start. I think they will come through relatively comfortably against Switzerland.
OK, Phil, thank you very much for your company this evening. We are running out of time. Thank you very much for your messages as well on social media. Hashtag Euroshow. Loads of you getting in touch about the most skillful players in honour of Ronaldo's feat. How about this one? Bot says it has to be the magician Bruno Fernandes, and Forza Not to sent us a very old picture of Jack Grealish playing in the lower leagues of English football. That is all we have time for. Thank you for listening. We're going to be bringing you our live show, the Euro Show, every match day, and we start streaming on the app and on Euro2020.com just minutes after the final game of the day. You can also subscribe to the official podcast using your favourite provider.
Yeah, every night Rob and I will be joined by a guest in our studio, like Phil was this evening, to react to results and to preview the upcoming fixtures. We'll also have all of those big name interviews like we did tonight.
Yeah, reporters at every club and team as well. Match day one is over. What will match day two bring? We can't wait to find out. See you next time on Euro 2020.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.